to the pledge, please.
Supervisor, let's have a roll call, please. Your mic's not on.
Here.
Thank you. We will begin with the chair's report, which is brief. There's going to be no report. We have a big agenda. So we're going to go ahead and begin. Chief Executive Officer report, Art.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Michael Turner actually to report. Is Michael here on the CTC meeting yesterday? Gosh. Or Doug Failing, are you here? Could you do it?
Somebody do it.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. We had a great day yesterday at the CTC. A number of very important items to this board came up and went through. Director Miles just did an excellent job for us on the I-5 item. We're putting forward the Proposition 1B reprogramming for I-5 from 605 to the Orange County line, and the commission was very ecstatic with our proposal on how we're going to proceed with the project and handle the complex issues and work on it. So my compliments to Mr. Miles on that. The governor, I'll cover it all, I guess, Mike. The governor signed a very important bill for us yesterday, and the board voted the letter of no prejudice so we can move forward with positive train control. That was voted by CTC yesterday as well. And we got two of the very important votes on the congestion reduction demonstration program project. Completed yesterday, we were able to get the environmental document certified and the letter of no prejudice so we can proceed ahead again on schedule with that project. So it was a very long day, a very long drive to get to Fresno, but we, with Mr. Miles and the help of others, just and Mr. Turner, had an excellent day.
Okay, thank you. I might just one more comment under CEO's report. Director Miles, could you maybe report on some very bad developments with Caltrans in the last day or two?
We were just notified by the governor's office on Monday that CHP will no longer be able to provide enhanced equipment in our construction zones as well as our maintenance zones. It has the potential for impacting our ability to do work with our contractors as it becomes a safety issue to us and the public by not having them present to enforcement in the area. Putting together a list of the impacts and projects that will be impacted by that decision.
Can I ask a question?
I'm sorry, Eric.
Well, we will come back to the board. We may investigate things that we might do. Perhaps MTA can pay for some security or safety during such a period. I just don't know.
How we gotta do that. What is the reason?
The reason that was given to us was that CHP no longer has the ability to work overtime.
The budget.
CHP is fee funded. It's not general fund funded. What's happening with the budget crisis has nothing to do with CHP at all. The CHP is completely funded, as is the department. I mean, this whole thing is a game, and the public is suffering. You know, when the governor shuts down the Department of Motor Vehicles because of the budget crisis, it's a game because DMV is fee-based. It is not paid for by the general fund. Shutting down DMV has no impact on the general fund at all. I'm not going after you, Mike, obviously. I mean, but shutting down DMV has no impact on the general fund. Shutting down, saying the CHP can't afford overtime anymore is only true if they're shifting money that is fee money dedicated to the highway patrol to something else. But it is not, does not impact on the general fund at all. So the governor's action threatens not only the safety of your employees and some of ours, but it also has the potential to significantly delay projects like the 405 where CHP involvement is critical, both for the motorists and for our progress, and for your crews and the contractors' crews, just to try and make some point as opposed to actually having budget negotiations. I mean, it's ridiculous. Art, I'd hate to see us in the position of having to come up with security we can't afford, or projects that get delayed. I mean, you know,
Avenue for the state to asking local government to bail them out, so.
Well, yeah, no, and what the ridiculous part, the most ridiculous part about this is it has no impact on the general fund. Highway patrol is fee-based.
All right. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Next, we'll take a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second. Any objections?
So ordered.
Okay. Listen, Mr. Walsh and Mr. Sachs, you'll have plenty of, you can address your issues in CE's report during public comments. Thank you. Consent calendar items. First, the items that are being pulled. Can we get the board secretary's mic fixed, please?
Items removed from consent are 2, 8, 12, 13, 17, and 24. And the conflicts on the consent calendar are for item 7, Weezer, Ridley Thomas, and Molina. On item 10, Ridley Thomas and Yaroslavsky. On 14, Weezer and Ridley Thomas. On 15, Ridley Thomas and Item 16, Ridley Thomas, and 19, Weezer.
Okay. I'll move whatever's left, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All right. are all those items pulled by the directors? All right, so the
jackets off, guys.
Yes. Okay. As items come up, Michelle, why don't you point out whose conflict is so we can address it at that time? But Mr. Ridley Thomas says he does not have a conflict on 16. Okay, there's a request to pull 6-2. That's a 2-6-8. 6-8. Why didn't they sign up? Okay, 2-6-8, and what else? Rest.
Then item 8, 11, 12, 13.
On the remainder, we have a motion and a second without objection, so order. Yes?
I need to be counted president.
Pardon me?
I need to be counted president, the previous vote. I'm not counted president yet by the clerk, so we could mark me as being here. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Katz is here. Supervisor Molina's here. Okay. All right. All right, let's begin. We'll take item number 28. A report on that. It's Someone here from staff on item 28? Finance and Budget Committee?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Item 28 is authorization to issue bonds. By state law, the item requires a separate majority vote of the board. The Finance Committee was fine with the item, but state law requires a separate vote.
Right, and this is in relation to Measure R, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. We have two members of the public, Dr. Clyde Williams and John Walsh.
Dr. Clyde Williams, 4115 Barrett Road, El Sereno, Northeast LA. Here's the beginning of the money. Always follow the money. What is this for? In one part, it says it's for construction expenditures, whereas in another part, it says for design and construction contracts. And then in another one, purchase of real estate. And then finally, project development. The balance of the bond proceeds may be used for project development and Measure R eligible highway expenditures during the period, the next 3 years. What are those, the eligible highway projects? So is this just another slush fund, project development? That can cover almost everything. Design and construction contracts, is this for construction or is it for supporting the new organization structure and these SR 710 North development. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh.
John Walsh, blogging at Hollywood Highlands, HIGHLANDS.org, and now Twittering at Hollywood Dems, Hollywood and then DEMS. This agency is drowning in debt. Drowning in debt and asking Barack Obama to throw them a lifeline. Well, Barack Obama came here right after Springfield and he tried to get a phone call answered from the mayor. This is when he was way behind Hillary. And the mayor didn't even return his phone call. Okay? Barack Obama's people have told others, and it's on our website, Barack Obama personally despises Antonio Villaraigosa because he spit in his face and wouldn't even talk to him. And now you want 3010. Thank you.
Thank you.
Everyone knows it's true.
All right. The items before us, moved by Director Du Bois, seconded by Director Fasana. Without objection, so ordered. Item 29. This is came to the board without a recommendation. As item 29. Okay, just relax. We'll get it. We'll get everything up there. All right.
Hi, we're here.
Wait. Just before you proceed, the reason this should just sort of give an update before you give your presentation. The reason this was forwarded without recommendation because the committee was concerned about what happens at the end of the project and does the MTA get stuck versus the city of LA and that we are on a bad road here. So with that, I'll let you go ahead.
We are asking the board to amend the FY11 budget by $1 million to complete phase one of the Lancashire Depot Rehabilitation Project. We're going to be doing this project in phases. The first phase will deal with the hazardous remediation and initial structural stabilization to maintain safety in and around the building. Upon completion of this work, we will then issue an invitation to bid for the release for the remainder of the rehab scope of work with a maximum budget of the remaining $1.9 million. There's currently a $2.9 million budget that was allocated to this project through the call for projects and with the City of LA CRA providing a local match. If the bids for the stabilization, the phase one work, exceed $1 million. We will come back to the board for further direction as to what you would like to do, if you want to go into the additional remaining budget. And then should the bids for phase two come in above the remaining $1.9 million, we will place the project on hold and we will work with CRA to seek additional non-MTA funds to proceed with the project, and the project will not proceed unless we secure those funds.
Okay. I know that Supervisor Molina, you had a, does this language cover our concern there?
I don't know. I'm going to ask a question.
Okay, go ahead.
I
turn your mic on, please. Oh, the red light's not on. Oh. Switch.
What are you guys doing down there?
There it is.
Here we go.
If they're bothering you, Supervisor, just let us know. We've got security.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Now you can all hear.
We had this in committee, and it's a very confusing route. And the biggest part is very hard to understand the math. So could we start at the beginning with the math?
Sure.
All right. Let's start at the very beginning, because I'm not sure exactly what you report is correct. Right now, how much is in the budget that has been set aside for this?
There's 2.9 remaining.
2.9 million. And the reason that we're asking for this, what, stabilization of the building,
correct,
which is going to cost us?
We have 1 million set aside for this. It's for soil remediation.
Excuse me, wait. I know you said it's not set aside as yet. It's,
well,
part of the 2.9.
Correct. I'm sorry.
All right. Let's correct that. So you have 1 million, which is what you're requesting now, right?
Correct.
So, let's talk about the last time when you had the bids. All right, you're saying that, and you said to us in committee, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the reason that you were now going to do this remediation of the soil, which anybody has to do at any point in time, is that hopefully you would get better bids. Now, last time you got bids in the range of what?
2.6 million to 3.5 million in 2008.
That's a different number than the 3.3 that you gave me the other day.
This is the correct
number.
Tell
me why you didn't take it.
The contractors were rejected because the requirement for the bid was that they had historic, previous work with historic buildings. The building as of the 1980s was deemed historic.
All right. And again, how many contractors do you know in the area that have done work with historic buildings?
There are a few out there. We've talked to CRA, and so there are some out there.
Right,
I can't
so
give you an exact number.
Why are
number.
We going through a process of trying to find somebody when we know where somebody is, when it's a very specialized kind of thing? We have an opportunity to do that. Now, you wanted that experience in rehabbing a, quote, historic building, or the company couldn't have hired somebody that had that kind of experience to give them some direction? Because you had somebody who could complete the entire building from $2.6 million, right?
That was in 2008, correct.
But you didn't do it at that time. So now you're asking us, let's go out. Now we're going to spend $1 million, which is going to leave us 1.9 for this soil remediation. What do you estimate that is going to come in now to rehab the rest of the building?
I don't have an estimate for that at this time, and that's
but
why we want
to. Do you understand? You give us a direction saying if you do this, we're going to get better bids, we're going to get it done. And right now, you keep getting, this math is difficult to follow. It either is or it isn't. You had 2.9 million.
I have a bid on the remainder.
I understand. But Supervisor,
the remediation and then to go out to bid.
I understand. Why don't we just go out to bid now? We had a bid for $2.6 million.
Including the remediation?
Yes. Was to do the whole thing.
All right. I mean, that's an option.
The point is that the staff is not explaining this thing correctly every time we look into it. And then the worst part is now we have $1.9 million left. So in that 1.9 million, unless you know you can get the building rehab for 1.9, then you're on a path to at least get something done successfully. They can't figure that part out. So let's assume that after you do the remediation, you estimate that the building rehab is going to cost you $3.6 million. Mm-hmm. Where does that money come from?
I would assume the city of LA.
No. The city of LA hasn't been...
Well, because the language in here, and the reason I say that, I'm not being sarcastic, said should the biz receive exceed the remaining budget of 1.9, the project will be put on hold until such time as additional non-MTA funds can be secured.
Correct.
So, I mean, I don't have a problem going out to bid for everything, if that's what you want to do. That's the board's...
I've just watched this over and over again, and one of the questions I asked about was the Universal Bridge, and I had asked a lot of the math questions on that, and all of a sudden it got continued. These things bother me. Why can't we just leave this alone for now, since we don't have the money, instead make an effort to try and find the money, or put it out to bid to have it all done together so we at least know honestly what the entire cost of the project is? You know,
that's fine. And make the motion. Wait a minute. Go ahead, finish.
I'm sorry?
No, I'm waiting.
I thought you had a question.
No.
My issue is that we get these half baked kind of things that come to us. And when you ask for continuity of what's the end game here, it's all over the place. I know what the end game here is. They'll fill this room with all those historic and other folks and say how beautiful we have to hold this building, and guess where the money will come from. Sorry. And I'm just very concerned on an ongoing basis how staff keep walking us into some of these traps. Whereas I'm saying, go back. Maybe that bidder for $2.6 million might be willing, because of not enough work out there, to maybe do this work, and we might assign for the remaining $400,000, $600,000, maybe some construction expert in historic building, and voila, the whole thing is done. But they don't make that effort. They're just moving it along to, I'm not sure where it's going.
All right.
There should be an answer for that. This is a common sense question.
Okay. Director Katz?
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, and I'm not a historical preservation expert, it's hard to get bids on doing the job until people know how extensive, or until the site's clean. It's not unusual, as I understand, where you have sites that have to be clean, to do it in two phases. One phase where you do the remediation, then you go out and bid on what's left. As I understand this, and it is not an attempt to do anything other than...
Which would have been a good way to start at the beginning.
Okay.
Which they didn't do.
I don't disagree with you. I just sort of, here we are.
But that's where we're going to be a year from now. We're going to be there, except the tab will be $4.6 million.
Except I can tell you, those of us who are from the city of LA on the board, it's not our intention to come back here and ask for the difference if the bid is more than 1.9. We don't intend to ask for more than's currently programmed for this money. The idea is to spend the...
We could put that in this motion.
It is in the motion.
No, it's not.
I thought it was the part that said no more...
But I'd be more than happy to accept your motion on it, and I would second it.
Well, let me ask a question, though. I thought that's what we said, if it goes beyond...
Where does it not say that? That's what I keep saying.
What I'm saying is...
item, should the bid...
They don't have the money to finish it because they don't know what it's going to cost on. How can you say, now if it says whatever the cost is, the city will pay the difference? That's in there, I missed it in the report.
No, my understanding, what Art is telling me, it's in the text, not the motion. What it says is that the balance, it may not be city of LA, could be CRA, could be foundation money, but put in the motion the language that says that, the budget for this is what's budgeted today. You spend the $1 million on the rehab, or the cleaning of the remediation. Whatever's left of that is the base amount of money left to do whatever needs to be done to that location. And if it's more than that, the additional dollars shall not be allocated from MTA dollars.
That's a very good motion. Let's put that in.
That's basically what this says.
That no other MTA money will go into this project.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay. That's a friendly amendment to the motion.
Okay. All right. So we have the item before us to expend the $1 million for the remediation. We have a $1.9 million remaining in the budget. Any amount of, after you go out the bid, that's in excess of $1.9 million will be...
Will not come from MTSS, unless it's cost overruns. Of course. No, I'm kidding.
Will not include any MTA dollars.
Will not include MTA dollars. Okay. And you can put any in twice if you want.
Proxy money.
All MTA dollars.
MTA dollars.
So we can sort of work that last sentence that says, should the bid receive exceed the budget, I think you should say the budget of $1.9 million, the project will be put on hold until such time as additional non-MTA funds can be
identified.
Yep. How's that?
It's a good one.
All right. So with that, I understand.
It's too easy.
I got a motion and then I have a second. Now we have public, Malcolm Klugman, followed by John Walsh, and then Kimberly Richards.
First question would be, what is the project you're going to eventually do? Now, what you have at that site is that depot is to North Hollywood what the fire tower is to Little Tokyo. It has a historic significance. Doesn't look like much, but it has a historic significance. Mr. Katz, there is a thing called Phil's Diner. You remember Phil's Diner on Chandler, which is now in...
Not quite that old, but yeah.
No, you should.
I'm close.
Used to represent it. Didn't it?
I was north of there,
but it's sitting somewhere. If you put a place to eat next to this depot, you could get private people to come in and help you do this, and you'll have a place where people can grab a sandwich or something between getting off the Orange Line and getting on to the subway. So that would be a public-private thing. You'd get more money, you wouldn't have to make Ms. Molina unhappy, and you'll do a good project that way.
That's one of the ways to secure non-MTA funds. Mr. Walsh, and then Kimberly.
I remember Phil's Diner.
John Walsh, read the agenda item. This started, the original contract, 1999. Now staff is saying it was a historic building. They couldn't give out the contract. They suddenly found it out. It's not an historic building. Read page 2. It is eligible for listing in the National Register. It is not an historic building. They lied. Now, in the past 11 years, toxics have been, and they said it, staff said it at the last meeting, at the committee meeting, hazardous materials are blowing off the site. Well, that's just my psychotic ravings. Page 2, hazardous material abatement is essential to clean up the roof asbestos, flaking lead paint, and to do soil remediation. So as we're here, for the past 11 years, people in the San Fernando Valley have been, that area, have been, including tourists, have been breathing in asbestos and lead paint. That's what's happening here. First you take our buses away and then you poison us. HollywoodHighlands.org.
Okay, Kimberly Richards.
Read it.
Hey.
And also the time, please.
Kimberly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, directors. Kimberly Richards, Metro San Fernando Valley Governance Council member. About 5 years or so ago, Metro lost its customer service center in the San Fernando Valley. It was located in a strip mall. The landlord was upping the rent to the point where we couldn't pay it. We closed that customer service center. Subsequently, the Governance Council approved a motion which came forward to staff that once the rehabilitation of the Lancashire Depot was completed, that Metro reopen the customer service center for the San Fernando Valley at that location. It's a logical place for it. It's our single highest traffic point in terms of our passengers in the San Fernando Valley. And directors, there is your reason for completing this project, because it's not just a building that needs to be rehabbed. It will provide a passenger amenity, a customer amenity, once this work is done. Please keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. The item is before us as amended. It's been moved and seconded without objection, so ordered. Item number 30, Operations Committee as revised.
I'll move the item.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Public comments, Arnold Sachs and John Walsh. Please be seated.
Thank you. Good morning, Arnold Sachs. Since you've established a project budget of $5,987,000 for the Metro Blue Line, Green Line, Transportation Information System, just exactly what, where will this be located? Will this be like an information system that's for the highways that's located in MTA headquarters? And what information will it give out? In addition, since you're dealing with the Metro Blue Line, and you're so judiciously changing the agenda items around, and you're, again, following the Brown Act, the Blue Line Construction Authority got authorized $640 million by this board. Yet it has failed to have a meeting in the 6 months prior to that. Since you uphold the tenets of the Brown Act, and the Brown Act says public agencies need to meet, when exactly will that be scheduled? And thank you, Ms. Molina, for standing up for $2 million. What about $640 million? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. Yeah, this is, is there anybody out here, Green Line person, demanding this? That they should spend millions of dollars because you're not educated about it? No, no one wants this except the contractors. And the ridership, according, 1984, Mr. Katz, correct me if I'm wrong, bus, including munis, 1.8 million. Today, bus and rail together, also 1.8 million. Nothing has improved. Oh, except there's another 1.5 million people. 20% drop in per capita ridership, bus and rail, all transit. The more you build, the fewer people take your system. That's a fact. And Dan Weichel has done an excellent job, the reporter here at Hollywood Highlands. You know why they're treating us so nice here compared to other meetings? Because there's a reporter here. Because when there is no reporter here, they treat us the way Hitler treated the Jews.
Come on, John. It's totally inappropriate. Totally inappropriate.
Well, that's,
your warning.
That's the First Amendment.
That's your warning. Okay, if you would briefly describe the information system, please. It's been moved and seconded, but just so that everyone is well aware of the project.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Board. I'm Daniel Lindstrom, manager of the Wayside Communications. This is the item before you is to establish a life of project for the Metro Blue and Green. It'll establish a message board system. The existing message board system on the Blue and the Green is obsolete and is no longer maintainable. This will expand the existing system on the Red and the one that we're constructing on the Gold onto the Blue and the Green.
So it'll tie in all.
It'll tie it, and you'll have one system for the entire system.
All right. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded without objection. So ordered. Item 31, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Item 31 is a receive and file report brought to the Planning and Programming Committee in July. The committee accepted the report except for an amendment to footnote number C on attachment A.
Who will highlight the changes recommended by planning?
Yeah, those changes are in bold, and we just need the board to accept the changes brought by the Planning and Programming Committee.
Okay. Are there any questions of staff at this point? We do have members of the public sign up. Dr. Clyde Williams, followed by Arnold Sachs, followed by John Walsh, and then Eric Roman, I believe it is. Dr. Williams.
Dr. Clyde Williams, El Sereno, Northeast LA. Whatever happened to the public-private partnership? Isn't this involved in the scheduling of the long-range plan, especially as it pertains to the six public-private partnership considered projects? I don't know. It does say to accelerate the LRTP highway projects. So maybe this is just another way of supporting the new expanded organization to help highway projects. I don't know. Because we need to know how the PPP relates to this long-range transportation plan. They've been going for 6 months now, but we haven't seen any information regarding what they're considering and how it will relate to the schedules and especially the project costs for the long-range plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold Sachs, followed by John Walsh.
Thank you again, Arnold Sachs. Basically, kind of to answer, help Dr. Williams along, all you need to do is look at the history here of the MTA. For years, the transit plan was for the Green Line to go to the airport, but it couldn't be built without the construction authority. Lo and behold, the Crenshaw Line comes in, takes the same route, no construction authority. Look at the amount of years the accelerated plan for the purple line extension or the red line extension or whichever color, pick a color from Crayola, to the west side from 1980s, since Bradley was mayor, they've been talking about it. This is a long-range, that's the long-range transit plan. What did it cost for this draft? What did it cost for this plan in comparison to what the draft 2008 long-range transit plan cost that wasn't voted on because it wasn't accepted, that ended up in the round file cabinets?
Thank you. John Walsh, and then Eric Roman.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org, Twittering at Hollywood Dems. Here is Miss Molina was the one who fought to get this document. You may remember. You fought to get this document at the committee meeting. This gives you the opening days. This is what are they smoking? What is the mayor smoking? These are the opening days under 3010. Incidentally, on 6/30/18, four lines will open. It's never going to happen. The mayor is tripping. You know the 3010. And where's the mayor? He's waiting back there till the bicycle thing comes. And incidentally, thank you very much. And I will be making a formal complaint to the Anti-Defamation League. Because I am a Jew.
Hey, thank you. I understand. Eric?
Members of the board, Eric Roman from the Bus Riders Union. We've already communicated with all of the members of the board as well as with the members of the Southern California Congressional Delegation, our opposition to 3010. Our concerns are fundamentally that we believe this plan will cannibalize the bus system. We said that about the LRTP when it was passed in October. It was a 30-year plan, and this acceleration will only accelerate the problems. Two major problems. One is cost overruns inevitably will be taken out on the backs of bus riders for this bonanza of construction projects, and you don't currently have the money anywhere in your budget to operate all the operate all these projects once they're finished. You don't seem to be going to Washington to demand more operations funds. We don't understand why that is. Steve Hyman on your website did specifically say that the way to pay for these projects once they're finished is to raise fares and cut services, basically on the backs of bus riders. Our civil rights concerns are have been stated repeatedly, and we'll continue to oppose 3010, and would discourage you from taking this motion. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, the item is before us. Director Molina.
I need some clarification. Now, I understand that this is a plan. So, again, if we are not successful,
I can hear you. I don't know about that.
If it is not successful, then we then we don't have a 3010 plan, correct? I mean, right now, this plan is acceleration plan. And right now, we don't have all the go-ahead on acceleration.
Right.
So the plan, when we don't get the acceleration, whenever that day may be determined and decided, because right now we're sort of operating that we're on our way to get it, we'll go back to the regular plan. So, I appreciate that. But I don't understand how we seem to be setting policy along the way, and I want it to be consistent. Now, one of the issues that you are looking at is the issue of the downtown connector.
Mm-hmm.
In the downtown connector, under this plan, you are capping it at a certain amount of Measure R dollars, correct?
Measure R capped the downtown connector at $160 million, and we are following Measure R, correct?
So is that going to be capping all projects as to what clear Measure R money is allocated for it, even though it's on a 3010?
We are looking at a policy that would, as a matter of board policy, do that, yes. Okay.
David, let me start again. If this is what you're doing with this project, is it what you will be doing with all projects under Measure R?
Yes, the strategy we're assembling does this for all projects.
Yes, so if in fact we are moving forward as a cap on this project, the downtown connector, is this a policy that you're saying across the board we will cap all projects to dedicated Measure R dollars, which is what the public's assumption is that paid for this additional tax, including mine. And I'm just trying to clarify, because it's very specific on here to the downtown connector.
We are evaluating a policy that will do that, and we'll bring it to you next month.
Well, then why are you doing it here? Did you evaluate the policy here?
This is simply a representation of what we've submitted to the FTA for their evaluation.
I understand. But you determined to cap it.
We are bringing to the board a decision in that matter. Our recommendation will be that we cap each project at its minimum in the Measure R Attachment A.
Then can we accept that is what we're moving forward here, is a cap to all projects as those dollars represented to the public and taxpayers as to what the Measure R contribution will. Not any new formula that is created of potential new ratios of eventual tax dollars. I'm making this up, obviously, but the point is that it's just going to be capped. If your project in Measure R is going to be $3.6 billion, you get $3.6 billion. You don't get $3.9 billion, you don't get $4.2 billion, you get $3.6 billion. I just want to make sure that's what it is.
Respond to that.
And Mr. Chair and Director Molina, indeed, we will come back next month with a recommended policy.
Why are you doing it now? Why don't you just wait all till next month?
The recommendation will say that all projects, the Measure R contribution, will be capped as outlined in Measure R.
You know if you have the votes for that?
That is the recommendation that we're coming forward with.
I understand, but the point is that I'm asking the question, why cap this project now when you may not cap the others? It's nice to isolate it, but I mean at the same time, I don't mind it being capped. I think it's a good thing. I would recommend that it be capped, but what I'm going to say is I don't think the votes will be here when you start talking the same language about other projects in other areas.
If I may clarify, yes. The action today is simply to receive and file this item. There's no...
but you've made a determination.
The action says approve. It says approve.
The planning committee is recommending
says
that.
Says approve.
Best with me, David.
Change is proposed. And she's got a valid point. If you're going to recommend capping all the projects, which I agree with, at the Measure R levels, then this is ahead of.
So we can pull this and put it with the policy next month. That's not a problem for the staff.
All right. We will continue this item. This will be part of Supervisor Molina. This will be part of the
overall
policy
which would
next
be
month.
Well.
Right. Very good.
That's no problem for us.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
So Item 31 will move to next month with the policy as it relates to the cap of the project. Item 32, hotspot.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Doug Failing with Ernesto Chavez of Metro. The 605 is a request to award and execute a contract on Route 605. There, before you is in three parts. The first part is the piece we need to move immediately on. That's getting the consultants moving forward on the feasibility study analysis. They're looking at Route 605 and those routes leading into it so that we can identify the points where the highest congestion exists and prioritize where the work needs to be done. The second part of that is to we want you to be aware that the contract anticipates three options for PSR, so we'll take those initially identified spots, at least three of them, and we'll do the necessary scoping work to determine what a project cost, scope, and schedule would be, so those could be moved forward potentially to design or construction at the will of the board. And then the third piece is to make you aware, again, separately in the past, this has been buried in the big numbers, to let you know that we do have a contingency on this project, so we're showing you separately the contingency from the anticipated base contract, and we're pointing out to you that we have three options that we would propose to be prepared to execute on this contract. Mr. Chavez and I are here should there be any questions.
Are there any questions of staff on this? Mr. Katz?
Not a question, just, you know, this is a Measure R project, and I appreciate the staff work very diligently to get this out quickly. This is a real quick turnaround time on the procurement side, and appreciate the expedited process and one we're looking at hopefully to replicate with other Measure R projects. But I just want to say this one is a great example of how to do it right. So thanks.
Thank you, sir. We've worked very hard. Procurement worked with us very well. We are going to try and replicate this on many more contracts.
All right. Again, there's life east of the 405 freeway. All right. The chair will move this item. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded. Without objection, so ordered. Okay, we have a... This is an important item. We need some board action on today.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is a recommendation on H.R. 6150. H.R. 6150 was recently introduced by Congressman Elton Gallagly, Republican from Ventura County. The legislation has been referred jointly to the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and to the House Judiciary Committee. In sum, the legislation would reform the Amtrak Reform and Accountability Act of 1997, that set as a liability cap of $200 million for rail passenger claims. In its essence, the bill has three fundamental aspects, three pillars. Number one, it would raise the cap from $200 million to $500 million in incidents of willful negligence and gross negligence and willful misconduct. And number two, it would include retroactivity to September 12, 2008. And the third fundamental aspect of this legislation is that it would tie the new cap, the $500 million cap, to the CPI, to the Consumer Price Index. We have recommended an oppose work with author position. We have met directly with Mr. Gallagly, his staff in Washington earlier this week. We shared that we have a common goal, and that is a safe commuter rail system in Southern California, and we're committed to working with the Congressman to ensure Metrolink's safety. We believe the agency's made a number of strides, but for reasons relating to the financial impact this would have on the agency, we have reservations regarding the legislation. And that concludes my report on H.R. 6150. I'd be pleased to answer any and all questions the board may have.
Mr. Cassidy, you had a comment?
I was just going to, one part I was going to add, Rob, not just the impact on SCRRA, but this agency as the 52% funder for SCRRA. The retroactivity in this is frightening beyond belief. Public transit agencies, Metrolink in particular, insure based on the $200 million cap. To go back and say that the cap would be $500 million, for instance, now, would not only devastate and probably put out of business Metrolink, but probably have a significant impact on the five county transportation agencies that fund it. The goal at Metrolink, just take 30 seconds, Don, is, and the reason we entered into the interpleader, which the four members of this board that sit on Metrolink supported, was it was the most expeditious way to get the greatest amount of money under the law to victims and their families as quickly as possible. This has the potential, if people think there's a gold mine somewhere, to blow up the interpleader, which will mean years of litigation before anybody sees a dime. We're trying to get money out as fast as possible. And just one other footnote, nobody knows whether the $200 million is enough or not. In the Glendale incident, that was resolved. It took 5 years. There were no trials, and it still took 5 years. And I believe the amount paid out in Glendale was somewhere between $40 and $60 million. So there's no evidence that the cap needs to be raised at this point. Financially, it would be devastating, but most importantly, it will significantly delay how soon money gets to the families and the victims who suffered enough 2 years ago.
Director Katz, I agree with your comments, and two points I failed to mention. One, we've reached out to a national coalition because, as you pointed out, this impacts not only Metrolink and its supporting agencies, high-speed rail, Amtrak, the Northeast Corridor. Senators from across the Northeast are very concerned about this legislation. And second, Congressman Gallagher has been in discussions with Senator Dianne Feinstein. And the senator is concerned about this subject, and in the four or five remaining legislative days of the 111th Congress, she may introduce similar legislation. It's our understanding that neither piece of legislation would be adopted into law, and this would be an issue that would be raised in the 112th Congress, and would likely, the proponents of this legislation would likely seek to have it included in a multi-year surface transportation authorization bill.
Yes.
I just have a few other comments. I think work with author may be a little too generous on this bill. I think it's a terrible bill. I think the retroactivity component of it is has a lot of constitutional problems. Secondly, I think he's focusing on the wrong end of the incident. He's looking at the tail end. Once the accident has happened, how do we compensate the victims? If he truly cared about rail safety, he'd be focusing on the front end, how to prevent these. Providing us funds for double tracking, additional funds for PTC, and advancing the cause of railroad safety, not just at the back end where you can dump money to the victims. We don't want any victims. Neither an MTA nor Metrolink nor any other rail agency. Let's work on preventing these from happening. So if we could give him that message, that we would support any work to prevent these from happening rather than increasing the compensation at the other end, I think would be a more productive route for us to take.
Okay. Any other? If not, though, we have some members of the public. John Walsh.
One point.
Yes, Mike. John, you're up for
supervisor. For the future, they ought to have an indexing of that amount. But to make it retroactive, you have an ex post facto constitutional issue that precludes that. If he's concerned about additional funds for victims, then have him do a special appropriation that bypasses any lawyers getting a percentage of those funds, that it goes directly to the victim without any lawyer receiving a contingency for those funds.
Yes, Mr. Walsh.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. They say nothing good about MTA. Not a single passenger in an MTA light rail or heavy rail car has been injured to the point of death. Not one. And what part of that has to do with United Rail Riders? And we've been fighting you for 17 or 18 years, and we've been successful. No one has died. Now, when there's the blood of white people, and most of those riders are white people on Metrolink, I thank God for Gallagher that he's fighting. Those people are dead.
Metrolink's blood, the blood of the MTA to Metrolink board members, you're responsible. $50 million, $200 million, half a billion, $1 trillion cap. You should pay for every ounce of blood that was shed in this county by rail riders. And we're 100% for this. HollywoodHighlands.org.
Judith Real, followed by Eric Welling, followed by Dr. Clyde Williams.
Good morning. My name is Judith Real. I'm here to ask you to work with Congressman Gallagher to lift the damages cap for Connex and Veolia, and not simply oppose the bill. I was on the train. I was injured. I was in the hospital for 3 days, and I suffer injuries to this day. And thank God I wasn't hurt nearly as badly as many of my fellow passengers and those people who were killed. I don't believe that we should have to compete for an inadequate pot of damages. I am a lawyer. I'm fine with the legality of this. As a victim, we'll fight that. This is not an unlawful ex post facto law. I don't need to convince you about how awful Connex's and Veolia's behavior was, because in your own pleadings, you said that their behavior was despicable, that they engaged in a despicable and conscious disregard for the rights and safety of others, that their conduct amounted to oppression, and that it was despicable and subjected SCRRA to cruel and unjust hardship. And you asked for punitive damages. And we can't even get the damages to pay the health care bills. The people can't get their loved ones back, they can't get their health back, but please don't block our efforts to get a modicum of justice and peace in this.
Thank you. Eric Welling, followed by Dr. Clyde Williams.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Eric Welling, and I was a member, a rider on the Chatsworth train when it crashed. My life changed that day. And when you say you don't want any more victims, well, I'm here. I'm in the enviable position to speak for people who died. I lived, they didn't. Their survivors are suffering every day. My family suffered, and for you to put a dollar cap on it is I think short-sighted. If you ask me of my personal life, if I put a cap on my volunteering to help kids play sports, so I sacrifice my volunteering because my medical bills are high, that doesn't happen in my life. It shouldn't happen here. Give us justice. Give us compensation. Find humanity. And I'll try and return back to a normal sense of life.
Thank you. Dr. Williams? Clyde Williams.
Dr. Clyde Williams, El Sereno. I wasn't on the train. However, I can read. And the important thing here is it says $500 million for gross negligence. Are you anticipating that there will be a continuing pattern of gross negligence? Because the negligence is limited to $200 million as it is now. So what are we really talking about? Are we talking about condoning gross negligence? It seems to be an important issue. Regarding the retroactivity, be very simple. Just have MTA or Metrolink declare that we will cover all expenses related to that one incident forever and put no cap on it. And that way you can remove the retroactivity from it, but it's a matter as to what were the controls of MTA and Metrolink on that particular situation. Was it gross? I think so. Thank you.
This before us.
Just a couple of points in clarification. The $200 million limit was not a limit chosen by either MTA, our four partners, or Metrolink. It's federal law. Metrolink made the decision to go ahead and file the interpleader at the maximum level so that everything that needs to be covered could be covered. We're not allowed by law to go above that. And all I can say is that I agree with the comments on gross negligence. We obviously don't condone gross negligence. the frustration we have had is even proving willful misconduct, which is the exception in the contract that Metrolink used to have with Connex. And based on the difficulty in establishing willful misconduct, even in a case where it seems obvious to those of us that are non-lawyers, I worry greatly about the ability to prove gross negligence even when it stares you in the face. The fastest way to get money to the victims, which is what we're focused on, is this interpleader. And I'm hopeful that the court approves that and that they will appoint a master, or whatever the court calls it, to distribute that money as quickly as possible. Our hearts continue to go out to the victims and their families, and our sole intent in using the interpleader is, how do you get that money out there as quick as possible? That's it.
Thank you, Richard, for clarification. Moved by Director Katz, seconded by Director DuBois, without objection, so ordered. Okay, we are going to go back to the pulled items on the consent calendar. Okay, we are going to go back to the items that were pulled from the consent calendar. I'm trying to do this as see what we need to. There was, hang on here just a second. I'm going to, item 24 seems to have the most speakers. Let's proceed with item 24, please.
Mr. Chair, I'd like just to make some comments about these recommendations. These flow from a great deal of detailed analysis as to ridership and demand on our transit system. We believe that the data shows that we can make these economies while continuing to improve the transit system. We've discussed over the past year issues about real-time service management enhancements, enhanced supervision, improved on-time performance, which has been, we've been moving, making progress in that direction. These are some economies that we should make independent of whatever the financial impacts are. We are running service today, which is excessive to what would be the standard in any major country around the any major city around the world. With that, let me ask Conan and Scott to make their report, please.
Okay. Good morning, Conan Chung, DEO Service Development. Today, what's before you is a recommendation to approve the Tier 1 service changes effective December 12th, 2010. Now, these Tier 1 changes really are, there's two components to it. The first one is to reduce duplication on key corridors, and the second one is to right-size the Metro Rapid corridors to meet service warrants. Now, in addition to the Tier 1 changes, the Governance Council's approved changes to 10 Tier 2 and 3 lines. While those types of services are not required to be approved by the Board of Directors, the details are listed in your report for your information. These 10 lines are all unproductive shuttles and local feeder routes, and we define that as being routes that carry 10 or 20 passengers or less. To give you a little bit of context there, our average bus route carries 51 passengers an hour, and our highest performing routes carry up to 100 passengers an hour. Again, for context, the 10 routes that we, the Governance Councils did approve for changes, all 10 of them initially we proposed to eliminate. However, based on an extensive public outreach effort, we decided to augment 6 of those proposals and maintain services on those 6 proposals to meet the key issues that were brought up. In terms of the public outreach, I just wanted to highlight some of the things that we did. We did conduct the 5 public hearings. We distributed over 100,000 take ones that explain all of the service changes. We did something different this time. We went out and actually went to 12 different locations at major transit hubs and stations, at street corners where we had more of these changes occur. And we talked to more than 1,000 patrons to get their input and their ideas. This was an opportunity to allow people to comment on the changes and provide input who couldn't otherwise come to the public hearings. We also surveyed passengers on board buses and at transfer locations. Again, that allowed people to comment further and provide us input. And then we put all of our information on rider bulletins, on the web, and on our buses. And again, based on these comments, we changed 6 out of the 10 low-performing route changes. As far as coordinating services to reduce duplication, what we wanted to do is leverage the new Metro Gold Line Eastside extension on 3rd Street, as well as high-frequency service on Cesar Chavez by eliminating the segments of Line 267 on Floral Street and 1st Street between Indiana and Atlantic. Both of these segments are within a quarter mile walk of both of these high-frequency services. So if you look at the map here, the highlight in yellow is the Gold Line extension. The highlight here represents a quarter mile walk distance. Cesar Chavez is highlighted in blue, and the quarter mile walk distance is within that blue bubble area. As you can see, people can walk easily between either of those routes, so therefore the services on 1st Street and Floral Street are not necessary. In terms of the right sizing of the Metro Rapid corridors, Metro Rapid benefits riders who are going longer distances by providing a faster service. However, since the Rapid services are implemented partially by converting existing local services, riders lose access to the local stops. And also, combined frequencies along the corridor are irregular because the Rapids end up catching up to the locals at some point along the line. So based on the analysis, we identified 8 rapid corridors where the average passenger trip length on the rapid was not much longer than the local, and the speeds were not much greater than the local as well. And so therefore, on those corridors, we feel that by eliminating the rapids and replacing the rapid with additional service on the locals and the limiteds, we'll provide more service at local stops, and we can also even out the headway to provide more regular service along the corridors. This is a slide that shows the distribution of the service changes throughout the region. As you can see, they're fairly well distributed, with the gateway area having 2% of the total reductions. This is actually the 2% accounts for the reductions relative to the total service within the area. South Bay, San Fernando, and Westside all have about 4% of their services reduced, and San Gabriel Valley has about 5%. So it averages out to about 4% of the system. And finally, in terms of Title VI requirements, we're obligated to do a Title VI analysis on any major service change. This makes sure that we are not disproportionately adversely impacting people based on ethnicity, household income, and/or limited English proficiency. And if we are, we need to make sure that there's mitigation measures and alternative services. The analysis is included in your board report, and all service changes do have mitigation measures and alternatives. And that concludes my presentation.
Are there any questions? If not, we'll go to the public comments. Falamars Nabavi, I apologize if I say the name incorrectly. Malcolm Klugman is after that, and then Brenda Coleman will be the first three speakers.
Hi, my name is Farah Maris Nabavi. I'm a resident of the San Fernando Valley, and I'm here to speak in support of the motion that Director Katz is planning to present, which is to restructure the proposed changes in the San Fernando Valley. I recognize that Metro does have to find some cost savings and efficiencies. And so there is a set of changes that are being proposed, for example, reducing slightly service on the Metro Orange Line during midday hours so that it's time to align with the Metro Red Line. That's a win-win benefit. It's a better service for riders, it's more reliable, and it also generates savings. Also in support of the elimination of the 902. However, on the Valley's number one retail corridor, the Ventura Boulevard corridor, service has been cut by over 40% in the past 5 years. So we want to make sure that if the weekend service is being eliminated on the 750, that all of those service hours are kept on Ventura Boulevard. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Klugman, and then Brenda Coleman, followed by...
Oh, I thought you were going to finish your sentence.
But no, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out how to say this next name.
All right. This is what he just said about the 750. It's you want people to take the red line, get off at, get off at North Hollywood and take the orange line, which is still very inconvenient to get to the Topanga Mall where you want people to go, whereas the 750 is terrific. The reason though some of these buses don't run as fast the rapid line is because the drivers stay in the right lane, which is the same lane as the regular bus goes, instead of pulling out because he has a mile to get from one place to the other, and so he's as slow as the regular bus. He just sitting behind the regular bus. San Gabriel people, the 177 is the only way to get people to the Rose Bowl area where there are recreation facilities and other things. Some reason the Pasadena City lines don't go there. They don't even go to the Huntington Museum. So you guys need to tell them to fix that.
Okay, Brenda Coleman, followed by, the last name is spelled S-I-L-A-S-S-I-E. Brenda Coleman? Is Brenda here? Okay. All right, next then.
Good morning, my name is Santayo Selassie. I'm from Los Angeles Taxi Workers Alliance. We had a big fight at the City Transportation Committee yesterday. They tried to green on the back of the poor taxi drivers. We support greening, and we support greening when buses all over the place, all transportation like New York, taxis are very busy. We want people to get out of their cars. That way our business increases, the greening will improve, and we support that. Why I'm here we're asking the board to reject all bus service cuts from most vulnerable least served communities in South and Southeast LA getting services cut. And instead, put motions to impact the city, cuts will have on the most vulnerable riders. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Patterson, followed by Elaine Neal, followed by Wally Scheidler.
Mary Patterson, I'm a resident of Compton. As a bus rider of the MTA 127, which is the route through Paramount, Bellflower, and Downey, as a bus rider, I urge you to take the right action to protect bus services in the LA County. These are crucial bus lines that the residents of the county who are dependent on the public transit. We need economical, fast, efficient services in all residential and commercial area of the LA County. No cuts. No grass grows under our feet. We commute to work, colleges, and maybe to a movie theater on the weekends or during the week. Take the right action today. No more bus service cuts. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you. Lane Neal, followed by Wally Scheidler, then Eric Roman.
Eric feels like it.
Lane Neal? Hey, Wally?
Good morning. First of all, let me say that it's unfortunate we have to
eliminate any service, but we have to maintain our prudent financial fiscal responsibility. I hope this board will support the decisions of the five governance councils on the proposed service changes in December. Some of the members of our governance council actually rode the affected lines in our area to observe firsthand the impacts it would have on our riders. I believe the impacts will be minimal. Please don't undermine the hard work of the five governance councils and the staff and approve the proposed service changes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Eric Roman, followed by Sun Young Yang, followed by Brian Maruccio. Again, I apologize.
Eric Roman from the Bus Riders Union. I am a Los Angeles County bus rider and also was involved in collecting over 1,000 or close to 1,000 signatures from bus riders, especially in South and Southeast LA, opposing these cuts. I don't know where Supervisor Ellie Thomas just walked off to. We want to make the point to him that 2 years ago, his predecessor on this board, Supervisor Burke, along with Bernard Parks representing South Los Angeles, were presented, along with the rest of you who were there then, with a proposal similar to this one, over 400,000 hours of bus service reductions. And directors Burke and Parks at that time asked the hard questions, forced the staff to come back, present alternatives, and were able to preserve over 200,000 hours of bus service. We ask Supervisor Ridley Thomas today, as well as the mayor and Director Huizar, to ask the hard questions of the staff, to demand that they present other financial options to be able to preserve this bus service, which we think disproportionately impacts communities of color in South and South and Southeast LA, as well as East LA. Thank you.
Thank you. Sun Young Yang, and then Brian Maruccio, and then Rosa Miranda.
Good morning, board. My name is Sun Young Yang, organizer from the Bus Riders Union. I would like to say that I urge this board to reject these service cuts today, and instead, specifically Councilmember Huizar, Mayor Villaraigosa, who's not here, and Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas, to really make the motion to actually investigate the real impacts that these cuts will be having, especially around the communities in the city and in South and Southeast LA. Specifically, if you approve this motion today, you will be undermining, literally attacking, almost 50% of the services that we were able to gain through the consent decree over the last 10 years. These cuts will result into more than half of the million hours of service that we were able to add in. And additionally, these cuts are very budget driven, and there's nothing multimodal about the transit planning that you guys are doing right now. We know these cuts are exactly happening because there are no funding available to operate any of the rail projects that are being pushed by Measure R right now. This is a direct attack on civil rights.
Thank you. Brian, then Rosa.
Hi, my name is Brian Mauricio, and I'm actually an organizer for the Bus Riders Union. I've actually gone the lines, and you know, the lines are late. There's a local bus coming, and then there's a rapid bus coming, so of course nobody's gonna take the rapid. All these little problems are happening, and I don't see the staff showing this to you guys, so obviously you're not going to make the right choice. By cutting all these hours, you'd be cutting half of what the Bus Riders Union has been working for. And you know, if it was a civil rights issue back then it's still a civil rights issue right now. Nobody's paychecks are getting higher right now with the whole economic crisis that's going on. So what we're proposing is that you guys reject staff proposal and not cut any lines. Thank you.
Good point. Rosa, and Archie Souter, and then Joanna Gasper. Rosa.
Buenos días. Mi nombre es Rosa Miranda, y soy miembro del sindicato de pasajeros.
Good morning. My name is Rosa Miranda, and I'm a member of the Bus Riders Union.
Esta mañana les urjo a esta mesa que no se opongan a todos los recortes de servicio que propone el personal.
This morning I urge this board to oppose all of the cuts being proposed to you, recommended to you by the staff.
¿Por qué confiar en sus argumentos y porcentajes y subidas cuando su prioridad debería de ser escuchar realmente a los usuarios del transporte y dedicar más fondos y expansión, mejorías y puntualidad en el servicio?
Why do you trust in their arguments and their statistics when your priority should be listening in truth to the users, to the riders of public transport, and your priority should also be dedicating more funds to the expansion, improvement, and on-time performance of bus service?
Muchas de las líneas que quieren eliminar en el sur y sureste de Los Ángeles es por eso que pasajeros firmaron más de 1,000 peticiones, confiando que esta mesa rechazará las propuestas de eliminación de servicio.
So many of the lines that you want to eliminate are in South and Southeast Los Angeles. That's why bus riders have signed close to 1,000 signatures in the petitions we have here, asking the board to reject the cuts in their area.
Supervisor Marrulli Thomas, usted ha demostrado que existe poder político.
Supervisor Ridley Thomas, you've demonstrated that there exists the political will.
Y la eliminación de 380,000 horas de servicio es un ataque a las comunidades y en específico a la que usted representa.
But the elimination of 388,000 hours of bus service is an attack on the communities you represent. The communities you represent.
Es por eso que usted no se puede quedar callado. Usted tiene la responsabilidad moral para luchar por su comunidad.
That's why we believe you cannot stay silent. You have the moral responsibility to stand up for your community.
Y no permitir que la segregación de muchas familias dependientes del transporte
público.
And
you shouldn't allow the ongoing segregation of many transit-dependent families in your area.
Aquí están las 1,000 peticiones.
So we want to hand in the signatures. We
right.
have
we will
968 signatures.
Archie Souter, Joanna Gasper, Reggie Streeter.
Good morning. My name is Archie Souter, and I'm a member of the BRU, the Bus Riders Union, and I'm also a rider. I'm a home care worker with the ULTCW, United Long-Term Care Workers Union. I need to, the bus is number 711, 715, 753, and the 608. I live in that community, and these buses are needed on the line to avoid uncrowded buses. So I'm asking Mark Ridley Thomas to, stop the cuts to the bus lines. Thank you.
Thank you. Joanna Gasper, Reggie Streeter, Ivan Chavez.
Hi, my name is Joanna Gaspar, and I'm a member of Bus Riders Union and a writer and a student. And I'm here today because I've been on the bus of all these affected lines that you're proposing to cut right now. And the reaction's always the same. People are getting worried, they're getting frustrated, they're angry because first in July you raised the fares and now you're cutting our services. We're paying more for less. And you guys seem to think that this is okay, but not for those people who have to wake up in the morning and go to work, go to school. I have to go 2 hours of school. So in the morning, I have to wake up at 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning to get to school on time. So imagine if I didn't have the 9:20 to get me there on time. I have to wait for the 7:20, which is always packed with other students going to other schools. So that's why today I come here in order to ask you guys to reject the proposed services cuts, because it's hurting our communities and you guys are not even paying attention to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Reggie Streeter, Ivan Chavez, and then John Walsh.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Reggie Streeter. I'm an organizer for the Bus Riders Union. Since Mark Ridley Thomas is not here, he needs to know that as a leader of our district, the 715, the 711 buses, Rabbit should not be taken off the streets. There are students who go to Westchester High School who take that bus. If they take that Rabbit off
school?
The line.
Which high school?
Westchester. Okay. That bus sometimes do go to Westchester, sometimes doesn't. If the 115 goes further to Westchester, it's crowded. It will take at least two buses, just longer ones, to haul all those kids. The Rabbit one, maybe two, but if you get a shorter 115 on that route, that bus is crowded when it's going back west. All them students plus other folks will not fit. It's good to keep the rapids on because it gets them to school faster, especially the one that's the 7-Eleven that serves the airport. That should be kept online. Because if you use the 111, which does run slower, it makes their route longer, and plus people may have to miss something. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll look at that. Ivan Chavez, John Walsh, and then Yvonne Cosi.
Morning. My name is Yvonne Corbeño Chavez, and I'm a retired city worker and a current resident of downtown Los Angeles. It's unconscionable the kind of service that the MTA provides. You know, I'm a taxpayer, and every time I pay a bill, when I total my bill at the restaurant for, you know, to calculate the tip, and you know, it really upsets me that almost 10% I have to pay for. Before I was riding the bus, I was thinking, well, at least, you know, it's improving bus service, but it's not. I just had to get here, had to walk 3 blocks to the bus stop, wait 20 minutes for the number 40, and then it dropped me. It said Union Station. I thought it was going to drop me off right here, drop me off by the jail. That's unconscionable. Now you're trying to cut services. I'm here to oppose all the cuts, specifically routes 620, 177, and 714. But also, I'm here to urge you to be responsible. You're playing with taxpayers' money. I'm a taxpayer, and I deserve good service, a good, prompt, convenient, and comfortable service. Thank you.
Thank you. John Walsh, Yvonne Cosi, and then Kimberly Richards.
Happy to see an Ethiopian here. So now I'm going to deliver the beginning of mine in Amharic, the Ethiopian language. So only one person besides me. Inesu Ibdoch, Ibd, Batam, Batam, Ibd.
Hey, see, John, do you want to talk to us?
Wait a second. Okay. We can't speak any foreign language here. Politically incorrect. Okay, let's start. He laughed, you see. Find out whether I cursed at you. I didn't curse at him, right? 1.8 million, Mr. Weichel, go check the documents. 1.8 million in the early 80s. That was the high point of the bus riding. Now, a quarter of a century later, two more sales tax. We're at currently 1.5 million weekday boardings. 300,000 less. And you have the nerve, Art Leahy, to say that it's excessive service. You have the nerve to say reduce duplication. You have the nerve to say it's unproductive. Shame on you. Tanaisteling, Tanaisteling. Find out whether that's a curse.
Oh, that's okay. I'll take your word for it. It was a compliment, John. Yvonne Cosi, Kimberly Richards, and then Esperanza Martinez.
I don't see the previous speaker, Mr. Chairman, so.
Okay, thank you. Kimberly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kimberly Richards, Metro San Fernando Valley Governance Council member. I'd like to remind you of comments I made when this agency's budget was being approved. And again, comments I made when it was obvious there were going to have to be some service restructurings. I reminded you that the last time the board overturned Governance Council decisions and put money back in to undo service changes, that changes that needed to be made got caught up with the things that might have been questionable. And I asked you when I testified earlier to please trust the governance councils to do their job properly. We have worked with staff on this. Obviously, that's had an input because they've changed some of the proposals. Please trust our judgment and reject calls to reverse the governance council decisions.
Thank you. Esperanza Martinez, Judy Redmond, and then Lance Bailey. Yes.
Hello, Esperanza is not here. My name is Judy Redmond, a volunteer member of the Bus Riders Union, a resident of Leimert Park in South LA. I, like thousands of others, are currently looking for work and might still be looking in December when the service cuts are scheduled to go into effect. Using public transportation to look for work is hard. Keeping a job using unreliable public transportation is even harder. I may not be able to find a traditional 9-to-5 job. I might have to work at night or on a graveyard shift. Cutting lines might mean walking further or waiting longer at night, both of which can be dangerous. The Crenshaw connection, the 608, which runs past my house, is scheduled to be eliminated. This line's ridership is primarily elderly people of color. It runs through the Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Plaza and stops in front of the only major grocery store for miles. It runs past the 300-unit senior living complex. It then goes through the densely populated low-income area known as the jungle. To cut this line is more than inconvenience. It is a source of mental anguish and inflates the sense of hopelessness that many of us already feel. Supervisor Ridley Thomas, Mayor Villagosa, and Councilmember Wisar, you have the power to halt these service cuts. This is not an economic climate for any kind of cuts, whether it's transportation, social services, or education. This is a time to join us in our fight to maintain what little we have left. This is a time for empowering people, not depleting their resources.
Thank you. Lance Bailey and Ivan Mendoza be our final two speakers. Mr. Bailey, are you here? Ivan Mendoza?
No, Mendoza's not here.
Okay. And Lance Bailey, are you not here? Okay. The item is before us, item 24. Okay. Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second? I got a second. Supervisor Molina.
You know, I am proponent of when we have to budget, rebudget these items. And I've always supported that when we have these kinds of service reductions, that they be validated and they be essential. We have a whole team of folks that are involved, and it's a very, very diligent effort that they make, and they do a very good job. And I'm not opposed to these service changes, but I can't find in all my documents. I did go through all of the streets and I looked at all the boardings, and I think they did a very competent job in reviewing all of them. I'm not opposed to that, but I want to get a clear understanding. These service cuts will reduce how much from the budget? It's not in our stuff.
This service change package on an annual basis would reduce about 270,000 revenue service hours.
I don't know what that means. I'm talking dollars.
Right. Because
$100 an hour.
Because we're implementing halfway into the fiscal year, we only achieve half of the savings. So roughly it'd be, for the FY11 budget, this package would be roughly $15 million or so, give or take. On an annualized basis, it would be a $30 million
On an annual basis, savings. $30
million? Yeah, around that.
That's a very, very dramatic set of savings for these few lines, which really talks about how expensive our system is to operate and function. And when you look at the kinds of service cuts that have been made across the board, and I look at the map and the options that are there in the boardings, if we have to cut, it makes sense that these are the ones that should go. And it's a sizable amount of money. But I must say, there's an agenda item that is coming up, and that's item number 8, which I've held, because I'm trying to understand, when I have been a part of being a conservative on this budget, and I've been a part of trying to honor that we live within our budget, particularly when it comes to some of these services, but I must agree that we are on a pathway that doesn't make sense in many respects. I mean, there's no doubt that we have to build. We got Measure R, we're going to build. But some of the issues about how we're going to operate are still lingering out there, and there does not seem to be answers as to how, whether in 3, 5, or 10 years, if we get the acceleration, we're going to run all the systems that we build. And again, I know that we're all betting that eventually some of this will be available. We're going to come up with a new tax page. We're going to come up with new rate increase. I'm not sure what it's going to be. But the issue is that right now, saving money for this organization is essential. And so this kind of movement that needs to be made, while it is sacrificing service, it is certainly creating an inconvenience to our dedicated bus drivers who use bus passengers who use this system. Still, at the same time, we on item number 8 are going to be asking for a supplement of positions that is going to cost us well over $4 million a year. And so it's contrary to a position of moving forward. We eliminated over 200 positions a couple of months ago with the idea that we needed to cut back on our budget. And I
save this conversation to item 8, please.
I'm sorry?
We save this conversation to item 8 as it relates.
Well, I think, Supervisor Kanabe, as we make this decision, I'm trying to put it within the context of savings,
okay. Right.
Which is why I'm raising the issue. Okay. I mean, this is an awful lot of money, and we needed to do this because we needed to plug that deficit, right, Art?
Correct.
We needed to plug that deficit in our budget. It comes at the sacrifice of people who, you know, again, may not have a lot of boardings, but there's somebody who all of a sudden that bus isn't going to be there. And as the gentleman said, you just have to walk a quarter of a mile further away to catch the next bus. It's a sizable piece of walk. The issue is, so, but we do save a lot of money. When you look at how expensive